Blog Talk Radio.
Goodwill Wrestling. This is Will, and I'm here with Rob Naylor. Rob, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm fat, like our topic tonight. I'm bulking up, if you will, and we're talking about a bulky, fat, obese, and awesome wrestler named Bam Bam Bigelow tonight. And I'm just happy to be doing this show because he is one of my all-time faves, and I've met him at least twice. So there'll be some stories about that, and I don't know, Will, what you think, man?
Well, I think it's real easy to get fat when you're snowed in and you're stuck inside while the blizzards are raging out there. You know, the whole country
That's
is under snow.
There's
so.
Lots of blizzard.
Yeah.
So I've been eating Spanish rice and all kinds of garbage. Just like all kinds of junk food, man. I wish I could eat a hoagie. Bam Bam Bigelow had a hoagie shop. See that transition there, Will? But, Hoagie shops are a little bit far away from me, so yeah.
Nice. Well, Rob, like we do every show, we'll start it off by telling the people the first time you saw Bam Bam Bigelow.
In a magazine. I saw Bam Bam Bigelow in a magazine. It was Inside Wrestling or The Wrestler, and they had this, I think it was The Wrestler, and they always had like a column where it's like introducing, and it'd be like, introducing Brigham Brown, or introducing the Angel of Death, or in this case, was introducing Bam Bam Bigelow, or Crusher Yurkoff, one of the two. I was like, whoa, that guy's crazy. And, like, he had the tattoos on his head, nuts at the time. And then there was another article about how he came in and just destroyed Lawler, like, his first week in the business. And they showed him doing, like, elbows and flying headbutts and flying splashes off the top rope. And I was like, what the fuck is this all about? And he just looked absolutely awesome. So that was my first time seeing him. And just shortly thereafter, in 1986, ESPN carried the Legends of World Class at 4 o'clock after school in my area. So I got to see the debut of Crusher Yurkoff with his manager, Larry Sharp, on ESPN World Class Wrestling, and he was really good, and the promos that Larry Sharp and Bam Bam would do were with me to this day, because Bam Bam was chewing apart, he'd take an aluminum can and bite right through it, and do all kinds of crazy shit like that, and Larry Sharp, for all his faults in life, I thought he was a pretty good manager, he was a good mouthpiece for Bam Bam, I thought, so that was the first time I saw Bammer.
Well, I think we'll talk more about Larry Sharp when we say it. But the first time I saw him, you know, living here in Texas, where I'm at, it is not snowing, by the way. But I just wanted to rub that in. But I remember seeing Bam Bam for the first time when he was Crusher Yurkoff, you know, watching world-class wrestling. And I remember just thinking about those tattoos, like who in the hell would you know, do that to their head. And, you know, to me, that was legitimately scary. You know, we talk about Russians and their bald heads, but we don't talk about fake Russians with their bald tattooed heads, you know. And as a young kid, you know, that was legitimately frightening for me, you know, to think that somebody was that tough that they would tattoo their head.
Yeah, I guess he was supposed to be Russian, huh?
Yeah, well, his name was Yurkoff, so.
Yeah, I know, but, like, I guess I never really put two and two together. I just know that I read that Fritz wanted them to call him Crusher Jerkoff, That's why they went with the name Jerkoff. So that fans would be like, Crusher, Jerkoff. I don't think that ever really caught on, unfortunately. But, yeah, Crusher,
yeah, well,
Jerkoff.
Thank God.
Yeah, Bam Bam hated the name. So he just...
I don't blame him because I wasn't really feeling the Crusher Jerkoff name either, you know. But and I do remember that at the time he had some ugly tights, man. His ring gear was not fitting with the badass image, you know, that was portrayed on his head, you know. So
his ring gear was awesome. The black wrestling singlet was great. It showed off those nice pasty legs. He was wonderful. But, no, yeah, it was pretty shitty gear, I got to be honest. But he made it work, man. I remember, and I'm going to talk about this match because it's one of my favorite matches of all time. The match between Bam Bam Bigelow and Zulu. People are like, who's Zulu? Zulu's a black man named Ron Pope from the San Jose Bay Area. Regardless, he was awesome. And he was like this terrible, big, jacked-up black guy who I convinced all my friends at that time was Zeus from the movie No Holds Barred, but it really wasn't. I was lying. But anyway, yeah, like he was a balding black man. But he was all jacked up on steroids or the gym. And he wasn't a necessarily good promo. He wasn't very good in the ring, but he was one of these Thunderbolt Patterson-type guys that would be very vocal about the racism in the business, but not on my TV show. I read about this in Dave Meltzer's paper. But he'd be very vocal behind the scenes, but in front of the camera, he's best known for wrestling Bam Bam Bigelow, Crusher Jerkoff in World Class, and Crusher Jerkoff kicked his fucking ass. Like, it was an awesome match because it was like an extended wimpy match, but like you give him a couple comebacks. Bam Bam did every fat guy move ever. Avalanche, check. Leg drop, check. Elbow drop, check. Big splash, check. Flying knee drop, check. Like, I love when fat guys would do all kinds of fat guy stuff. And, like, he did it all. And then he ended it all.
Hey, Rob, real quick. Did he do the Bundy running splash in the corner?
The avalanche, yeah, man. And, like, he did, like, the fucking nuclear splash. Yeah, that's the avalanche. And he did the nuclear splash off the top rope for the big pin. And then Zulu turned bad after the match and went with Bam Bam and Gary Hart. He became Zulu the Doffy, who wrestled Ricky Steamboat at the Cotton Bowl. But then I don't know what ever happened to him after that. But Zulu and Bam Bam was a good-ass match. I liked it. I thought that was a good showcase for Bam Bam to do every fucking move under the sun and just kick his ass.
Yeah,
so,
I just want to tell the people that are listening, if you're curious about Ron Pope or Zulu and you want to check out his stuff, don't waste your time, man. That guy is absolutely one of the worst wrestlers to have ever come along. I actually saw some footage of him from San Francisco in like 1978. You know, it was like footage that Buddy Rose had saved, and he had to have been, you know, if not the worst wrestler, at least in the top five. The guy was just so awkward. Like you said, he was jacked to the gills, but he was so awkward. If he needed to move left, it was a guarantee that he was moving right. You know, it just. And I remember there was actually a match with Ron Pope in World Class at the time against Abdullah the Butcher, which was kind of fun.
Oh, it was awesome. That match was awesome. It was an angle. Because Ron, this is the story, guys. Ron Pope's cousin was a vegetable, according to Gary Hart. Because Gary Hart's like, he's going to get you like he did your vegetable, brother. I'm like, what? Because I guess Zulu's brother, Zulu came out and said Abdul the Butcher maimed his brother in, like, Nigeria or the Sudan or some overseas match in Africa. So he's like, I'm now here to avenge my brother who's a vegetable. And, like, he came in the ring, gave all these shitty-looking headbutts and big punches to Abdullah, and Abdullah did his funny selling. And then Gary Hart came in with this thing and wrapped it around Zulu's neck, and I never understood what it was at the time, but it was a clothes hanger, which is... It's a good thing I didn't know what it was, because I've been attacking my friends with clothes hangers. But, yeah, he wrapped the clothes hanger around Zulu's head and rolled his eyes in the back of his head, and Zulu went down. But, yeah, man, good call, Will. I'd have forgot about that otherwise.
Well, that was probably the best, Rob Pope match I've ever seen, but I still thought the match sucked. So save
dude,
your time.
Dude, that was awesome. I loved it. So, yeah,
no,
Ron Pope was not so bad. Ron Pope was fine in World Class. He probably sucked shit everywhere else. I've only seen him in World Class, but, like, I'm sure he was terrible. But I thought he was okay. But But
I'm just going to reiterate it. If you're thinking about seeking out the Ron Pope matches, seek out some Bam Bam Bigelow matches instead, for sure.
Yeah,
but
Bam Bam then left World Class. He was there. He had that match with Abdullah against like Brody and Steve Simpson, and that was like pretty much it. Like he never really got any programs, and then he just like bounced. And he went to Memphis, where he was awesome again.
Well, you know, if Fritz thought that he should be called Crusher Jerkoff, you know that he wasn't going to get a strong run there. So, you know, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's more fitting that we talked more about Ron Pope in World Class than we did Crusher Jerkoff, you know. And, you know, and for good reason, you know. His World Class run was kind of unspectacular. But, as you brought up, when he went to Memphis, 1987, had a feud with Jerry Lawler. Great feud, great matches. I can't say enough about Bam Bam in Memphis. What do you got for me?
Yeah, I didn't see it till more recently, but yeah, all his Memphis shit was awesome. Like, I'd seen it in the papers, and like, there was a show called Pro Wrestling This Week that we got in Shamokin, too. It was like this weekly show that would talk about all the territories in like an hour, except WWF, because they won't get footage. But like, you'd see clips of Bam Bam. I'd be like, wow, this guy's awesome. Or like, him and Lawler punching him and him flying all over the place for Lawler. And it was really awesome. And I liked him a lot there. I liked him when he was a bad guy. And as Lawler's always prone to do, he turned Bigelow good guy. And then he teamed with Lawler against Idol and Tommy Rich in 87. And that was really good, too.
Yeah.
But Bam Bam was the fucking man, dude. Like, I loved Bam Bam. I read about how he challenged Mike Tyson in 1987 and how he went to Japan in 87. I just read a lot about him. He was my favorite. And, like, we'll get into this, too, but, like, Bam Bam was what many big fat wrestlers would say was a shitty fat guy wrestler, but fuck that, because, like, the guys like Bam Bam or PN News or Jerry Blackwell would, like, take moves and bounce all around for the little baby faces and do drop kicks and enziguris and crazy shit like that. But I like that. Like, I don't think every fat fucking guy in wrestling needs to be, like, immobile. Like, I like Bundy and Gang and all them guys, too. But, like, even Bundy's always like, well, he didn't work like a big man, Bam Bam Bigelow. He's like, he's my friend, but he didn't do too much. And he also always talks down on Jerry Blackwell. But, you know, it's different, you know? I mean, everyone doesn't have to work the same. I mean, I could see where if you were a big fat guy and you were teaching another big fat guy how to work and how to get over effectively, they don't give the other guy anything and be like a big fat piece of shit and punch and kick. But, like, I don't know. I thought Bam Bam pulled off his little gimmick pretty well. It made him stand out. Like, if all the fat guys were doing crazy shit, fine. That's stupid. But, like, if there's one fat guy who's a little smaller than all the other fat guys, I think he should be able to do drop kicks and stupid shit like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, that's what made him stand out, you know? I mean, he was moving around the ring like a junior, but, you know, like, you know, fucking was huge, you know, that where, like you said, when he was killing people in World Class, you know, with the Avalanche and the nuclear splash and whatnot, you know, well, you expect that, you know, and good for him. But then when he's busting out cartwheels and drop kicks and flips, it's like, okay, wait a minute, this guy's insane, you know. I mean, that's what made Bam Bam stand. Well, that and the tattoos on the head, but that's kind of really what made him stand out, you know, is this guy can move, you know, and he. You know, on our last show, Lars mentioned how Jerry Blackwell reminded him of a barrel, you know. And but Bam Bam didn't really come across like that. He just came across as like this big, thick biker guy, you know, that could kind of murder you, you know. But I don't have any problem with the way Bam Bam worked, you know, because one, it produced a lot of great matches, like you mentioned the tag teams against Idol and Rich,
Tommy Rich
with Lawler. Yeah, and then he had a 30 minute Texas Death Match with Jerry Lawler, you know, which you know, back then, I mean, sorry, man, but I don't remember seeing King Kong Bundy going 30 minutes, you know, without like. Huge, well, I've never seen Bundy go 30 minutes, but you know, I mean, if Bundy was in the ring for amount of time, you're guaranteed an extended a nerve hold or a chin lock or something. You know, you never had to worry about that with Bam Bam because that guy was always on the move.
Yeah, Bam Bam had really good cardio for a big guy, and like you said, he moves really well. But I liked it. Like, they, Lawler, Rich and Idol broke Jerry Lawler's balls on the turnbuckle. So then, like, Lawler's like, oh, you'll get yours. So then he brought in Bam Bam Bigelow out of nowhere, and Bigelow and Lawler broke, I believe, Tommy Rich's balls. So, like, they had, like, the back and forth with that. And then I even believe they were setting up a scaffold match, which I think Bigelow might have been in. Maybe he wasn't. I think it ended up being Dundee and Lawler, because Bam Bam flew the coop, as he was known to do. But Bigelow in Memphis was awesome. He needed to go there. He got a lot of seasoning. And I don't know. I guess that's about it. I remember on Pro Wrestling This Week, when they announced Bigelow was going to WWF, they had a music video of Bam Bam, which I don't think I've seen since. But it's just this video of Bam Bam beating the shit out of everybody and press slamming a referee and just dropping him behind his back. He's beating the shit out of everybody. I was like, fuck. It might have been like mental health or whatever the fuck that song was. But like, bang your head,
bang
whatever.
Your head.
Yeah.
So like, let's fucking start it on the 80s rock. 80s,
we are. 80s rock and Bam Bam were synonymous. Yeah, so like, Bam Bam was awesome. I was like, fuck yeah, he's going to be in WWF, and he's going to fucking beat Hulk Hogan and all this other shit. But I liked it when Bam Bam went there. I was excited for Bam Bam, because I remember they brought him in smartly, and they did the battle for Bam Bam. They got all the managers together, and, you know, Bammer, week in, week out, turned him down.
Well, I'm glad you brought that angle up, you know, where all the managers were trying to recruit him for their stable. And, eventually he picked Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Now, what did you think about Humperdinck? Because me, personally, I'm not a fan of the guy. I just don't get it. I didn't think he was, you know, that great of a promo. I didn't hate him or find him entertaining like I did with Heenan or Cornette or even Jimmy Hart. You know, I have this mental block where I just can't get behind, you know, Humperdinck. You know, I'm sure he's well-respected. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Yeah, his performance might not have been that good, but I had read so much about the legend of Oliver Humperdinck and, you know, the House of Humperdinck and how he controlled Florida that, like, it was a huge deal to me that there was a manager coming into WWF that wasn't one of the usual suspect managers that were there. So, like, when Humperdinck came in, I was like, fuck yeah, you know, and you're right. He never really did any good promos there. He was basically like Jimmy Hart. They basically castrated him once he got there. Like, I thought he was a better promo than you thought he was, probably. But, like, he was like a Floridian Lou Albano. But I was okay with that. Like, he wasn't as verbose as Albano, but he's a fat guy who wore Hawaiian shirts and had funny-looking outfits who I thought he was better as, like, a deranged cult leader type guy in Florida, to be honest, than like he was in WWF. But they gave him that stupid ass Alice in Wonderland outfit, and he had a scepter and shit. It was pretty funny. Yeah, I thought they were kind of an absurd looking pair. But at the same time, I kind of liked it too. I can't say I disliked it at the time. I thought it was awesome. So
well, I think the unfortunate thing is that if Bigelow would have been paired with a Heenan or a Jimmy Hart, I just think that his stock in WWF would have gone up so much more. You know, I think
that.
I
fucked it with him anyway, though. Like, he was always a good guy, and like they kind of pushed him really hard as a good guy, but like you never really. He just either he didn't stay around long enough, and they never pulled the trigger like they should have, or he was injury prone. I don't know. All I know is the most cool, awesome thing ever was when Bam Bam Bigelow survived over Hogan and the Survivors, and he was in the ring with Andre, Gang, and Bundy. And he beat Bundy, he beat Gang, and then he almost beat Andre. Like, I thought they made him that night. Like, and then, like, he was gone within, like, a month or two.
That's right. Okay.
But, like, I thought they did their best to make him, but then at WrestleMania, he lost to One Man Gang by count out, which was a really shitty match and finish. And then, like, he was just gone.
Which Mania was that, Rob? Was that WrestleMania 4, the tournament?
Yeah, that was what that one was. And maybe he was supposed to win originally, and then, like, he got hurt, and it was like, fuck it. But I don't know. So.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I thought they did everything they could.
Well, I don't know. Maybe in my head, Bam Bam Bigelow should have been a heel. You know, he could have been that monster heel. And because he was such – one, he was a big guy that if they would have had a Hogan Bigelow program, you know, he's credible enough in the ring and he can bump and bounce around the ring enough to have good matches with Hogan. But he's also a guy that you could legitimately say could give Hogan a run for his money, whereas if he pinned Hogan or if he beat Hogan within inches of his life, that you would believe it. You know, I really think that they missed the boat with that, you know, they could have had a really good heel run.
I don't deny that would have been good, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Hulk that himself said, fuck that. Because he wasn't as big as he wasn't as big as people think. Like, he would look like a midget when he was in with, like, Gang or Bundy and Andre. So you're Hogan would have towered him. And it just, I think Hogan would have rather wrestled someone super fat or super roided or like, you know what I mean? But like,
or super tall, right, yeah.
Yeah, if Bigelow and Gang weren't there, or if Bundy and Gang weren't there, I could see. But like, I don't know, I think Bigelow was just a little too small. I think the matches would have been fucking awesome, don't get me wrong. He would have had way better matches. But I also think that he had to be a babyface because they had like three other fucking fat guys already. So he was like the good guy, fat guy. So that was how that went.
Just a moment ago, you mentioned how, you know, he was gone. And that's when I think Bigelow started popping up in New Japan. Now, what did you think of his New Japan run, man? Like, especially that late 80s run. And
this is going to be weird, but honestly, my least favorite stuff of his is in Japan. I don't really know why.
Wow.
I just never thought his stuff in Japan clicked. I thought his matches in All Japan and New Japan weren't that great. Hidden Muda was okay. Nothing better than that. I don't know. Whereas Vader, I thought, shined. I just thought Bigelow was kind of there. Now, Bigelow and Vader as a team later on in the 90s against, like, Steiners and Hase and Muto, that was cool. But, like, I don't know, like, his New Japan, like, Inoki never interested me. Like, I never really cared about Inoki, so Inoki Bigelow did nothing for me. What else? I don't know. Well, what else? Who else did he wrestle? Like, Choshu and...
Yeah, he wrestled Masa Saito. Now, let's not forget that he was in a six-man with Owen Hart and Liger, and I remember you really liking that match. That was on our
Buzz
New Japan 1980
match.
Set.
Buzz Sawyer match, yeah. Buzz Sawyer was a freaking match. So, yeah, that was cool. Like, I don't know, just, he never really, like, I liked him in NWA a little better. I liked him in his second run in WWF a little better. I don't know, like, even before he left WWF, him and Hogan were teaming up against, like, DiBiase and Andre. And you're like, fuck, you know, what an awesome super team that is. And then he's just gone. Like, okay. And I don't know. In Japan, I never really got into it. Like, you always heard about him being in Japan and how awesome it was. And then when you actually watch it, at least when I actually watched it, I was like, all right.
He's from the East, you know?
Yeah, I always liked it when Vader would wrestle Bigelow. Like, Vader Bigelow's awesome, or Bigelow Norton, or if Kokina was involved. Like, when they put all the fat guys together in Japan, I thought that was funny. Like, that always was cool. But, like, aside from that, like, Bigelow and singles in Japan, what was your favorite Bigelow singles match in Japan? Like, I can't even pick one. I can't even think what it was.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, man. I'd say I know him and Masa Saito hooked up, and I don't know if I even like that match, so.
Yeah,
but,
I guess I'd have to go
I like,
with Muto.
I like the
like
idea
the
of the matchup.
And Muto. Yeah, him and Muto had one, and it was like, all right, it was good, but it wasn't like what you'd want. Like, oh, I bet you that was amazing. It was good, but it was like, all right. Like, his tag stuff, him and Vader against Muto and Hase was awesome. And Vader against the Steiners was really awesome. Like, I thought he even looked a little better than Vader in that match than the Steiners.
I think what will happen is, you know, after the show is posted and we get some feedback on the show, you know, for the listeners out there, why don't you suggest some good New Japan singles Bam Bam Bigelow matches for us. You know, I don't remember being that impressed with them when we were going through the 1980s New Japan. So I'm not even going to argue that point, Rob. You know, I'm going to concede
that. Yeah, I'm
sure
that.
He did
fine.
Probably wasn't.
I'm sure he did fine. I just don't think he did really, really well. Like, when he left New Japan, where did he go? NWA. And that's something that
right.
fucking pissed me off, because he should have stayed there longer in NWA. Because, like, the time he was there, he was awesome. Like, him and Wyndham, obviously, is the match everyone's going to talk about at Starrcade, which, if they would have had a bigger series of matches, that would have been insane. I remember Dusty and Bigelow fought Flair and Wyndham in, like, house show matches. I don't think they exist. Dusty and Bigelow fought the Road Warriors on house show matches. I don't think those exist. But, like, I remember reading all this awesome shit Bigelow was doing, and now years later, decades later, you look back and, like, not too much of it exists on tape. You're like, fuck. But Bigelow was awesome there. I remember he came out and he fucking beat up Wyndham and press slammed him, and then he went to the top and gave him a nuclear splash, and everyone went nuts. And then that set up Starrcade. I was like, fuck. I was like, what's gonna happen? Like, he's gonna come here. He ain't fucking around. Like, and then he was gone in a matter of minutes. And then it's like, well, that sucks.
Well, I remember watching that Starrcade match against Wyndham, and I know that there's mixed feelings on it, you know, so some people don't like it. I love the match. I thought it was great. I thought that, you know, Wyndham
like
was bouncing around like a pinball.
Who the fuck
like
it?
Well, there are people, you know.
I thought that was, like, universally beloved. Like, I can't find one fault with that thing. Like, I thought Wyndham looked awesome. He's fucking belly to back and Bam Bam and slamming him, and Bam Bam's selling was really good. He's like Weeble Wobble selling from Barry's shit, and like Barry was like a pinball for Bam Bam's shit. Like, I think you're gonna be hard pressed to find two guys that compliment each other as well as those two. I thought that match was fucking incredible. I might even say that's my favorite Bam Bam Bigelow match.
We'll talk about that, but you know, he actually did a gut buster in that match. That was just awesome. And, you know, compared to a lot of the finishing moves of the day, I just thought, man, that should be his finisher, you know, the gut buster that Bam Bam Bigelow put on Wyndham. And I think the only problem I had with that match was the ending. It was a count out finish. You know, I thought it was kind of weak for the way they built the match up. But, you know, overall, man, I thought it was a great match. And that's really the only real memorable match I remember from that run, from that NWA run. So
I don't remember shit.
I mean, you know, up to this point, you know, except for I think his Memphis run, you can probably say that a lot of Bigelow's career up to this point is like opportunity missed, you know. So
yeah, real quick, so we don't forget it, we got to talk about Bigelow's WWF finisher, which was the swan dive. The old Rick Martel finish from the AWA, where he'd be on the ring apron and he'd grab the rope with both hands and jump over and splash somebody. Super impressive.
That's right.
That bad to do. Like, it actually never looked like that impactful, but like, it was still kind of impressive to watch. So yeah,
a big fat man leap over the ropes. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
right. Pretty cool finish.
Yeah, he still should have used a gut buster. Just my personal thing there. Now, I know we talked about it briefly a few minutes ago, but then, you know, he went back to Japan and had a run in All Japan. And like you said, you didn't really think his run in All Japan was that impressive. And then he had another match against Muto, which, you know, you touched on briefly, but I remember that the fans in attendance there, you can watch the match on handheld, really appreciated that match. And that was like in December of 1990. And then,
was that a G1?
You know,
match?
This. What's that?
Was that G1 Climax tournament or whatever they called it?
I think it was.
I think that's when
August.
Nelson was at live and he was talking about how fucking amazing it was. Like, I remember Muto Vader had a G1 Climax match in that tournament that everyone talked about, but I don't think it was taped. It might have been a pillow match, but regardless, like, you're right. All the Bam Bam stuff that was supposedly amazing, I've never seen on tape, so I don't know.
Right. And then you talked about it briefly earlier, too. You know, like, the Bam Bam Vader tag team. Now, from the shoot interviews I've seen and from the even just clips I've seen, these guys didn't get along, man. I mean, I think that if they would have been, I don't know, better friends or, you know, tried to market it in the States, I think that would have been a really awesome tag team if they came back and marketed themselves as such, you know, in maybe WCW in the 90s or whatnot. What do you think about that?
I think Vader was a dick. I mean, yeah, I will believe Bam Bam on this, where Vader supposedly punched an old woman, an old Japanese woman who was driving him to a show because she wasn't driving fast enough. And Bigelow's like, you know, who the fuck punches like an old Japanese woman? So he just didn't respect Vader, I don't think. And, you know, you don't want to believe Vader did that, but, like, you always hear he's a big teddy bear. But, like, I could see him really abusing. Like, you hear about the Paul Orndorff thing. Like, he was kind of a bully. You know, he carries himself real well in interviews, and he comes across like a nice guy, Vader does. But, like, I've heard enough to the contrary that, you know, I don't know. My feeling was just like, eh. So I don't think that team would have ever worked. Bam Bam always said that Vader felt threatened. And I could see that, too. I mean, I don't know. I just think that it would have been an okay team, but Bigelow just never seemed to stick around long enough. I mean, fuck. What was Bigelow doing in 1989?
Think about it. He was in New Japan.
He left in 88. He was gone for the first half of 89 and late 89. Where was? Oh, he was in Dusty's Federation, the PWF. Remember Dusty got kicked out of NWA at late 88? And he created the PWF with the Big Steel Man. Bigelow wrestled,
right.
I think Dustin was on that show, which sounds like a fucking awesome match now I think about it.
Okay, well, yeah, but in 1989, I mainly remember him in New Japan, you know.
I didn't see any of that on US TV, so I forgot about that.
Right.
But, like, where was he in the US? He couldn't have been in New Japan full time, so, like, he was just probably doing indies. I saw him in 1990 on the indies. But, like, 89, it's kind of like, where the fuck was he? I think he wrestled for Windy City in Chicago. Him and Terry Gordy had the Battle of the Bam Bams. I remember that. I think that exists on tape, too. I should try to find that. But, like, the Battle of the Bam Bams.
What year was
Windy
that? What year was the Battle of the Bam Bams?
88 or 89, for sure. It could have been 88, but fuck it. We'll say 89, just because I don't know where he was in 89. We'll say he was in Windy City for a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know what the fuck he was doing. But then, like, in 1990, before he came back to WCW, he did indies for the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. And that was when I met Bam Bam Bigelow in Shamokin. When Bam Bam Bigelow wrestled Abdul the Butcher, and I was fucking losing my mind for that. Because I remember it was supposed to be a big cage main event, Bam Bam and Abdullah. And I guess they just felt lazy and didn't want to take the cage down afterwards. So then Orndorff and Nikita was in the cage. And then Ron Bass and Junkyard Dog was in the cage too, just because they didn't take the cage down. So I was like, what the fuck? But I remember Bam Bam was leaving the Shamokin Area High School gym. And I was like, how old was I? 1990. I was 12. So I ran out to him, man, hey, Kai Keller, you're my favorite. Oh, okay. And I'm asking him questions. I asked him if I could carry his briefcase. So he hands me his briefcase, which is like as heavy as I am. And I'm fucking carrying his briefcase to his car. And I'm like, how would you get your tattoos, Bam Bam? He's like, I fell in a thorn bush. I'm like, okay. He was awesome. And like, he signed my program. He's really nice. And that was like my favorite thing I ever had, like souvenir-wise. I was like, fuck, that's such a Bam Bam fan. Jesus Christ. I always like
and
more after that.
Yeah, and that wrestling mecca of Shamokin, you know, love it.
Dude, Vince McMahon was running Shamokin. Until 1993, he ran in Shamokin. Andre and Big John Studd had a match in Shamokin. One of the first Snuka against Ray Stevens matches after the big Hamburg angle in 83 was in Shamokin. So, yeah, we were once on that that WWF, itinerary sheet, but, you know, whatever.
Well, remind me that when we find the footage, you know, we'll have a best of Shamokin set coming out.
Oh,
from,
I wish
know,
any
whatever.
Of that shit existed. That'd be great if it existed. I don't think much of it does, unfortunately. But, Then he went back to NWA in what was my most hated Bam Bam Bigelow incarnation. when he was in Sullivan's Slaughterhouse, which is fucking terrible.
I don't even remember that, man. Fill me in on that. I have no idea what happened there.
Okay, in 1990, Sullivan, Buzz Sawyer, and Cactus Jack were at Sullivan's Slaughterhouse. And one week they just brought in Bam Bam. And they were fighting with Captain Mike, Norman, and Abdul the Butcher. That's
a good guy.
So that tells you how shitty it was. Like, I like all these wrestlers, but, like, they all were really shitty at this point. Bam Bam seemed like he didn't give a shit. Abdullah is just Abdullah, and as a good guy, he's almost worthless. And then Captain Mike was terrible at the time. He wore a captain hat and everything. It was fucking brutal. And Sullivan was okay. Buzz Sawyer was toward the end, so he sucked. He was a shell of himself. So it was just all bad. And Cactus was Cactus, but he couldn't save it. But I think there was a six-man with Bam Bam and the Road Warriors against Sullivan Slaughterhouse at Capital Combat. It might have got cut from the tape, but I think that match exists somewhere. But, yeah, then he left. Then he just fucking left. Or he would show
and I think that was the thing, too, about trying to get behind Bam Bam, is that, you know, you invest your time and energy, you know, either cheering or booing the guy, and then, like you said, he's just gone. He vanishes. You know, he's a vanishing act. And so
he'd come back every time, like, NWA was in, like, East Rutherford, New Jersey at the Meadowlands. But, like, aside from that, he'd never be around. So it was like, okay. And then they start using Vader in 1990. So then, like, WCW had their fat guy, so they didn't need Bam Bam. And then Bam Bam was just, I don't even know what he did. Like, aside from Indies in 1990 and 91, I'm not sure where Bam Bam was. Aside from in Japan, like in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. But and look, to be fair, you know, in New Japan, he had the tag matches against the Steiners, the tag matches against Kudo and Hase. So, you know, I mean, he was still building up his video footage there. You know, I mean, and I really enjoy those matches. I really like that 1990s New Japan tag style, you know, where guys are just throwing bombs at each other nonstop, you know, and bleeding and it was kind of like a war of attrition, you know, which big move is going to take down, you know, which big guy in those matches.
Oh, yeah, I remember Rick Steiner hit him with a belly-to-belly suplex, which to this day is one of my favorite belly-to-bellies ever. You know what a really good belly-to-belly suplex was, just off-topic? When Magnum T.A. beat Walter McDaniel for the U.S. belt in the cage. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that's a Naylor comp match. Off-topic again, but fucking Walter McDaniel as a heel in, like, 1984, 85 was fucking awesome. He took a back suplex, like, he bumped way more than I ever in my mind thought Wahoo McDaniel bumped. Like, I want to watch way more Wahoo McDaniels just because I think I always liked Wahoo McDaniels a lot, but, like, the more I watch, I'm like, fuck, and you really never really hear much about Wahoo online as far as, like, specific matches at least. Like, I know Dean loves Wahoo, and, like, he'll go off for a long time about Wahoo and Johnny Valentine, but, like, Wahoo is a fucking man. I want to watch more Wahoo. I'm just throwing that out there. Anyway, back to Bam Bam.
I'm with you. I'm with you on Wahoo, man. I mean, Wahoo's one of those guys, though, that, you know, yeah, he was a really good heel. You know, he really was. But to me, there's just something inherently wrong with having your Native American representative as the bad guy. It just kind of bothers me, you know. I mean, the Indians should be the good guy, man. They're the ones who got fucked over, you know. They're the ones who should be gathering sympathy, you know. Shouldn't have Wahoo McDaniel as a bad guy, you know.
I would like his angles in the NWA when, like, Jimmy Garvin attacked him and dropped him on his head. Like, what a great feud, gorgeous Jimmy against Wahoo McDaniel. You can't get two polar opposites, but yeah. So we do one thing we got to do is we got to do a show on, like, 1985, like Jim Crockett. Like, when I watch more of it eventually, like, oh, so awesome. But anyway, Bam Bam Bigelow.
When we do the Crockett set, 1985 will be well represented. I guarantee that for sure. What a great time.
Yeah.
Probably right around the time where I started to become this wrestling-obsessed nerd, you know, where I just couldn't miss wrestling. It probably started around 1985. You know.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't have kept watching. Like, WWF was cool and all, and I liked it. And, like, Hogan getting his ribs broke by Bundy in Morocco and shit like that would keep me really interested, and it was kind of the element of danger. But, like, Dusty's TV for Croc, it was fucking insane. Like, he fucking was going to die. It was so good. But anyway, so yeah, Bam Bam Bigelow wasn't part of any of that, but he did take a good belly-to-belly from Rick Steiner. I'll get back on topic here. But, yeah, so that was what he did. And then I think he just did that until late 1992, which is when he popped back up in WWF. That sound about right?
Yeah, man, let's talk about that run. And I think his first feud when he came back was with Tatanka. You know, speaking of Native Americans, so we can segue there.
No.
He
had at least like 8 months of not feuding with Tatanka and just like fighting with Wimpy. Like, he started in October of 92. I don't think the Tatanka thing happened until, like, middle 93. And, like, he just was there. It was awful. Like, he had really good wimpies. He did sentons. He was one of the first fat guys doing shoot sentons on people. We've got to find some of those matches, by the way. Wimpies. But he had a really good run in wimpy matches. I remember they put, like, Earthquake and Typhoon against him and Yokozuna, which is always awesome because, like, the new fat guys were beating the old good guy fat guys on their way out. So those matches I liked. And, like, the fat guys, like Yoko and Bam Bam, would win cleanly over the other good guy fat guys, which is, like, awesome. But so they just kept doing that. And then Bam Bam just beat people, and it was always impressive, but they never really gave him any kind of real angle. And as you said, then came Tatanka, and he ripped his feathers up, and, you know, that was fucking awesome. Tatanka and Bam Bam was great, but it almost seemed like that was all Bam Bam had for, like, a whole fucking year when they could have been doing other shit with him, too.
To be fair, he did have some memorable matches against Owen Hart, I think, on Superstars or something. And then he had Bret Hart, you know, at the King of the Ring, which people still talk about, you know. But mainly more as a Bret Hart match than a Bam Bam match. But, you know, I mean, I think he made it to the finals of the King of the Ring that year. So,
Bam Bam against Bret Hart is one of my favorite all time matches. Fuck Barry winning the match. I like the Bret Hart match even better. I'm going to do this right now. I might say fuck the Bret Hart match later, too. But, like, Bret Hart Bam Bam was fucking amazing. So good. And, like, it was really cool that, like, Bam Bam even didn't have any steam on him at all. But, you know, he had a really good tournament, and he beat Hacksaw Duggan, and then he lost to Bret in a fucking incredible, incredible match. Another match, if anyone says anything bad about it, they're fucking crazy. But, yeah, that was a really good match. Again, worked perfectly together, and I really liked the finish. And then Waller turning on Bret afterwards. Like, the whole Bret versus Bam Bam Waller angle afterwards is some of the best wrestling shit ever. That was really good.
Well, let me touch on that because I've been working on a 1993 yearbook recently, okay? And, you know, I've been watching all of this Bret Hart, Jerry Lawler feud stuff. And it's one thing to watch it on WWF TV, right? And that's cool. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff going on there. You know, you had Jerry Lawler running down Bret Hart's family, obviously, you know, always ragging on Stu and Helen Hart. But what really adds another dimension to it is I've also been watching the 1993 USWA footage where Jerry Lawler is, you know, he's Memphis Kingpin. You know, he's the biggest face in Memphis. And he turns Owen and Bret Hart heel in Memphis. And then Vince McMahon comes in and does his early prototype of the Mr. McMahon character on Memphis TV. And, you know, to watch that stuff back-to-back where you have Lawler and Hart switch roles from WWF to USWA is really amazing to watch. I think when I send you the 93 set, man, and you watch that stuff, you're going to say, wow, you know, only Jerry Lawler could have pulled that off. Where he was hated and so despised in WWF, but so loved in Memphis.
I remember not even liking it at the time, just because I was like, well, Jerry Lawler isn't, I remember when Bret wrestled, this is a year later, but when Bret wrestled Tokushi and he wrestled Jerry Lawler on the same show, I was like, fuck Jerry Lawler, dude. I'm like, what the fuck does he have to offer? Bring in Hakushi. He's the guy that can be the future and have a really good match in Brett that we haven't seen a million times. But, like, looking back on it, that whole 93 Jerry Lawler was really fucking good. And another match I hated at the time, and that was one of my favorite matches, was when Lawler didn't show up at SummerSlam and they sent out Matt Bourne as Doink. Dude, I almost quit watching wrestling. I almost quit watching wrestling because of that match. I was so pissed that this fucking clown was an embarrassment to the wrestling business. And even McMahon was going, this was a ripoff. And I'm like, it was a ripoff. And, like, I took it the wrong way, whereas, like, Lawler ended up getting his ass kicked. But I just kept hearing McMahon himself say it was a ripoff. And I'm like, what a ripoff. Fuck this. And, like, I, like, even went out to go get, like, popcorn and chips and didn't even watch Doink against Brett. And then when Lawler came out and he beat the shit out of Lawler, too, I was just like, this is fucking bullshit. And, like, you know, I'm going to just keep watching WCW instead. And, like, I hated it. But, like, now I think it's one of the most awesome fucking things ever. Like, just because, like, Doink was so fucking good now. Like, now that I'm not a fucking idiot anymore, I can realize that it was brilliant. Like, Doink was fucking... Well, Matt Bourne Doink. The other Doinks I still hate with all my heart and soul. But, like, right. Matt Bourne Doink was fucking dope. So, like, Matt Bourne Doink and Lawler coming out and hitting him with a crutch, I believe. Like, that was fucking great. That whole SummerSlam 93, I think it was. Yeah, that was really good.
But, really good. And Bam Bam, I think there's a angle on TV where Doink comes out to harass Bam Bam after Bam Bam wins a match. And so, but before he harasses him, he ties like a tripwire, you know.
Horrible.
So
this is like the worst shit. This is when Ray Apollo took over as Doink. And I remember being so pissed that Bam Bam was stuck wrestling fucking Ray Apollo as Doink for, like, fucking another whole year after Tatanka feud, which, you know, Bigelow pulled both of them off. But at the same time,
the
what a mid-card
shit,
purgatory.
It's the funniest shit seeing fucking Bam Bam trip over that tripwire and seeing him just go splat on the ground, man. I'll make sure that's on the 1993 yearbook as well, man.
Please don't. And then they had the worst match ever, the Survivor Series match from 1993, where they had the fucking Doink Men on a Missions and fucking Doink and some other guy dressed up as Doink. And, like, they had, like, bananas in the ring and shit. I just, like, fuck this. Like, that whole, like, that, like, summer to Survivor Series time in WWF had me so fucking furious at, like, how stupid wrestling was getting. Which now I'm saying,
yeah,
good stuff, but, like, I will say that the Doink Lawler stuff was good, but, like, by the time they got to the Survivor Series shit with Doink the Clown and Bam Bam, I was just like, no, wasn't feeling that at all.
Well, you know, I have a theory on stuff like that, like, you know, Matt Bourne Doink, Jerry Lawler. I think that when you're a teenager or, you know, maybe even early 20s, maybe late teens, you know, guy, you don't appreciate guys like Matt Bourne or Jerry Lawler, you know, because those are kind of men's men wrestlers, you know. And then when you realize as you get older how smart they were and how, you know, how good they were at their craft, that's when you start to appreciate these guys. You know, I don't think you can appreciate them at an age when you're a teenager, you know. I mean,
well, my thing, too, was, like, at the time in 93, ECW started, and, like... Mm-hmm. There's
Which
a goddamn
was not good,
clown.
By the way.
What? What'd
1993 CW was not good, but okay.
My favorite. Anyway,
Eddie Gilbert was awesome.
Really,
Terry Funk was awesome, but the rest of it.
Unbelievable TV. So yeah, so like, ECW's out, and like, it's hardcore, and like, wrestling isn't fucking cool at all in 1993. So like, you go to school, and everyone just talks about fucking sweeping wrestling in, and then they bring out the fucking wrestling clown. And you're like, man, I feel dumb enough watching wrestling. Now there's this shit. And like, it was just a recipe for disaster when you're a teenager. When people are like, well, you know, I wonder if anybody else likes what I like. And then, like, people are like, oh, you watch that? And then, like, dumb shit happens like that. And you're like, fuck. So, like, that's probably why. But looking back on it, I give a shit less. I was entertained by Matt Bourne Doink. But that shit with the Men on a Mission and riding tricycles in the ring and fucking flipping on banana peels can fuck off. Like, that's still embarrassing. Like, and Bam was involved in that shit. So I was like, fuck. Dude, I don't know if I told you this. I found a ballot, my 1993 Wrestling Observer newsletter ballot. Because I first got the Observer in, like, I got my Observer ballot in September 1993. And I told Dave Prazak about this the other day, because Prazak said I should do a show on, like, the Observer Awards, but, like, awards from the past. And I had photocopied my Wrestling Observer Award, so I'd always have a copy of it. So when I was at my parents' house, I found it. Dude, my views on wrestling in 1993 as a burgeoning smart mark were so fucking hilarious. Like, Doink was, like, my most embarrassing wrestler. Doink I fucking had all over that thing. Like, I hated – I'm surprised I didn't fucking go shoot him or something the way he'd read his ballot. And, like – I had all kinds of other – oh, Bobby Blaze was my rookie of the year over, like, Jun Akiyama and Men on a Mission, which is another great one. Bobby Blaze and Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Just it's just so much stupid shit. Like, there was some shit where I had some pretty cool answers. It's like, oh, wow, I knew what I was talking about. Oh, my favorite was for best booker, I put ECW's booker, and I put in quotes, Crockett. Like, I thought Jim Crockett booked ECW in 1993. So, yeah, there's all kinds of stupid shit like that. But we'll have to go over the ballot more thoroughly later. But, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Let's talk about the show idea for Prazak, man. That sounds pretty fun, man. I think we'd be
Yeah, Prazak was dying. But, what the fuck? So, anyway, so yeah, Bam Bam then, after he was done with Doink and fucking Tatanka, in 1994, he was in a tag team with Tatanka with Million Dollar Man. And I thought they were really good as a tag team. Like, really good. Tatanka's underrated as fuck. But, like...
Well, now, how did you feel about them canceling, like, that 10-man tag from that WrestleMania?
Nah, dude, they always do that. Like, I never even cared. I was like, they two things would happen every year before WrestleMania. They'd cancel the multiple-person tag match, and, like, they'd cancel the Berserkers match. And they canceled the Berserkers match at SummerSlam, too, for whatever reason. Poor John Nord. I felt bad for him. So then Bam Bam was in a tag team. First of all, Bam Bam Tatanka from one of the Royal Rumbles was a fucking incredible match. Second of all, then they teamed up the next Royal Rumble, and they wrestled Bob Holly and 123 Kid. And that was incredible. That was the first time I saw a Rey Mysterio Jr. spot on a WWF pay-per-view, because 123 Kid and Bam Bam did the Psychosis Rey Mysterio thing where you throw the guy up in the air and on his way down he catches you in a Frankensteiner. And if you watch that in slow motion, you literally see, I think, 123 Kid break his neck. Like, it's awful. Like, it looked cool, but, like, in slow motion, you see him land right on his head. I know he broke his neck somewhere after that, too, but that could not have helped. But Bam Bam against 123 Kids, so fucking good. I think they have an Action Zone match from 94, 95, which is incredible. Like, that's some of the best shit Bigelow ever did, too, when him and 123 Kid wrestled each other. So.
And then, speaking of the Kid, I remember that, and maybe my timeline's off here, but I know he had a feud with Razor Ramon, too. What are your thoughts on that?
Bam Bam?
Yeah.
Bam Bam had a feud with Razor. I do not remember this at all.
Am I imagining things?
You might be. I don't know. That sounds fucking awesome. I would hope I wouldn't forget that. But he might have wrestled him, but I don't remember a feud with Razor. I do remember Bam Bam would be on all these Coliseum home videos, like, in all these random-ass matches. That could have been one of them. Him against Undertaker.
That might have been it, man. It might have just been one of those things where he just had some random matches, but the ones that made tape were, you know, with Razor, where they were just kind of, like you said, matching up on, like, a Coliseum home video or multiple Coliseum home videos or something.
Yeah, so there was that. So, he was always a good Coliseum home video wrestler because, as we've said a million times, WWF never did shit with him except for putting him in cool dark matches at TV tapings for Coliseum videos and put him in matches with Tatanka and the fucking Clown Doink for, like, 2 years. So, yeah.
You're probably right, man. It was probably just like a random one-off. I just remember seeing a match from 1994 with Bigelow and Razor. I probably just automatically assumed that they were feuding. So because I know, like, one of the things that you hear is that the clique around that time liked to fuck with Bam Bam. You know, that's what I just remember. That's the saying, and that they really made his time difficult there. So maybe that's why that came to mind, that maybe they were feuding in real life and not actually on TV.
Couldn't be. I just know they turned Bam Bam good on Million Dollar Corporation after the Lawrence Taylor match. I guess we can talk about Lawrence Taylor. That angle where he pushed Taylor was awesome. I believed it. Even though I had the observer in my hand telling me it didn't happen, I was like, oh, shit, that was real. And they had him come out as Scott Bigelow on Raw, like the first time they used shoot names. I was like, what? So then they did the big match. I thought that's one of the best carry jobs in the history of wrestling. Fucking Bam Bam carrying a drugged out fucking LT to fucking 3.5-star match. It's like, what?
No, out no doubt, again. Man. I mean, yeah, that's one of my favorite celebrity wrestling matches right there. It was Lawrence Taylor versus Bam Bam. And then, you know, you had Salt and Peppa there at the show.
Yes, I was going to say that. Salt Peppa was awesome. Salt and Peppa was awesome on that thing, man.
Yeah.
You take Salt and Peppa out of that match and it's nowhere near as good. they were integral to the enjoyment of that match for me.
That's funny, man. And then, you know, it's funny that we mentioned Lawrence Taylor because he's been in the news a lot lately. I guess, you know, he's actually going to get off on his child rape rap that he had. So, you know, kudos for Lawrence Taylor, I guess. I don't know. What a mess.
I didn't read any of that shit. But I'd like to think he didn't do it, but... Surely he did. But, anyway, so, like, Bam Bam. Bam Bam carried Lawrence Taylor, and they had a hell of a match. And then they turned him good the next night. And then, like, he had a good guy match with Diesel in 1995, like April or May. So I remember it was the highest rated Monday Night Raw ever for some reason. Yeah, this was right before Nitro started in September 95. And this is, like, May or June 95. And Bigelow wrestled Bigelow wrestled Kevin Nash, Diesel, in a world title match, and Diesel beat Bam Bam. He might even beat him with a powerbomb, too. But he beat Bam Bam. I remember that got ridiculous ratings. And then the corporation turned on Bam Bam, and Diesel and Bam Bam became, what dumbass name did they have? The Beast Brothers or some fucking dumb shit. And, like, they had that tag team match at King of the Ring or something. You remember any of this?
No, man. I mean, so to me, 1995 WWF is like the lowest of the low. It's the nadir of wrestling for me, man. It's not. It's
Dude,
not
that shit was awesome in '95. I loved it. So yeah, I liked it, and I thought they were like the Bam Bam Brothers or some shit. But I think that was when you're talking about the clique. I think that's when they all turned on Bam Bam and thought he was an idiot, and Bam Bam thought he got buried by those guys. And then by, like, fall 1995, you see Bam Bam doing clean jobs for Goldust when Goldust debuted, Bam Bam doing clean jobs for Bam Bam, for British Bulldog. And, like, then you knew he was kind of on his way out. And then, like, by the summer of 95, I think he was gone.
Where did he end up after that?
I mean, early 96, he was gone. He did a one-off in ECW. As a referee for a Taz match, and then they had Taz choke out Bam Bam after the match. And then he left again, and then he came back again to ECW at some random Asbury Park house show, teamed up with Balls Mahoney against the Triple Threat, turned on Balls Mahoney, joined the Triple Threat, and then the rest is history, because it was Candido, Shane, and Bammer as the Triple Threat.
Now, what were your thoughts on the Triple Threat, man? I mean, you know, as a stable.
I always liked it. I don't like Shane Douglas that much, but he was a good shit talker at times. And Bam Bam was a great stable person. He should have been a stable earlier because he's good at it. And Candido and Bam Bam, I mean, you can't say anything bad about that. And Lance Storm, to his credit, Lance Storm was kind of their what did you even call him? He was their...
Like a flunky?
He was
like
a pledge.
Like
a Triple Threat pledge. But, like, when they would wrestle Lance Storm, Lance Storm made Bam Bam look better than anybody. Because he would take these crazy hit tosses way up into the lights. and he'd take all these crazy bumps in offense for all Bam Bam shit. But, like, he made Bam Bam look like gold. So, like, Lance Storm kicked ass. And then, like, Lance Storm was part of the Triple Threat again. I remember they did the deal where Bam Bam turned on the Triple Threat and came out to Welcome to the Jungle in New York, and he beat Shane Douglas for the belt. And then Shane and Bam Bam had the world title rematch at November to Remember in Pittsburgh, where Shane beat Bigelow with a belly-to-belly suplex through a piece of table and a chair. And that match had a... The ending of that match is insane because the whole place goes apeshit. But I guess they were trying to make that match like the Vader versus Flair in Charlotte 93 version in 1997 in Pittsburgh. And it just wasn't fucking happening. Like, there was some cool shit in that match, but Shane Douglas is not close to being able to carry a match as good as Flair and Vader was. And I don't even like Flair, but it was not close to it. But then they turned on Lance Storm again, and Bigelow turned bad with Shane and Candido again. I swear you're a scorecard for this, but they did do that. So then they were the Triple Threat again in 1998, and yeah.
Well, to me, I'm just experiencing a lot of this ECW for the first time. You know, recently, you know, through video footage or whatever. I never got to experience it live, so I always, like, I'm always curious just to see, you know, what people thought. Because on tape, you know, when I'm watching it back on tape, I always just feel like it could have been so much more. You know, and I know you just brought up that, you know, they should have had Bam Bam in stables earlier, but I think, you know, like we said, man, the guy was a magician, you know. He was a disappearing act, so... You know, do you really want to put that guy as like a center point of your stable only for him to disappear on you 6 months later or 3 months later, you know? So, you know, but then, you know, with the Triple Threat, I just thought, I don't know if I want to say anybody was a weak link. I just didn't think that they were like maybe as fearsome as like someone like the Four Horsemen or even like, Sullivan's Satanic Stable or something, you know, some of the stables that we've talked about on past shows where, you know, like, to me, they just didn't gel as well as, like, other stables. So, I mean, that's just my two cents.
I liked it more than you did. I thought it was pretty good. Bam Bam, I thought, was used really well. He wrestled Taz a lot, and him and Taz had probably Taz's best matches. Him and Rob Van Dam in Buffalo and
They had really good matches.
May 1998 was one of my favorite matches. Bigelow and RVD had great chemistry. Like, Bigelow really accentuated RVD's positives. They took that thing all over the place. There's some house show matches with RVD and Bigelow from, like, Florida. They're just incredible. But, like, everyone talks about the Buffalo match, which was really awesome. But that Buffalo match was great. The Florida match RVD and Bigelow had was really good. What else did Bammer do? He had a shitty match at New Jack at WrestlePalooza 98 because New Jack was fucking out of it, so Bigelow had to wrestle a guy who's not even there. Him and Spike had some really classic matches. He threw Spike out in the crowd a bunch of times and crowd surfing Spike, so that was really smart uses of, like, making Bam Bam into a monster. That was really good. His finish was
Hold on, Rob. Is that Spike feud? Is that kind of when Spike got the Monster Killer tag there?
It might have been. I know. I think he did beat Bigelow. I think he did beat Bigelow once, and that was a big deal. And that's when Bigelow threw him out in the crowd. But he wrestled Bigelow a lot and basically got Bigelow over as a monster before Bigelow beat Shane Douglas in November 93rd.
You're right.
September 97. So then, like, when they got back together as a triple threat, Bigelow and Taz had their big feud all year. And I swear to God, I'm forgetting something about Bigelow here. But
he had a three-way with Sabu and Taz around the same time.
Yeah, I don't think I've even ever seen that match, believe that or not. But Bigelow, anyone worth their salt who knows about ECW at the time, and I watched all of it, Bigelow and Jerry Lynn were seen as, like, the workers. Like, if you couldn't have a good match with Bigelow or Jerry Lynn, just fucking fuck off. Because those guys, whoever they wrestled, the guy they wrestled would have the best match of their ECW career most of the time. Like, they were, like, the veteran guys who could just gel with whoever. Like, the only bad Bam Bam Bigelow match I think I ever saw on ECW was probably New Jack. That sucked. But,
yeah.
Like, aside from that, Bam Bam was awesome. Bam Bam and Taz was great. They did that thing where they broke through the ring. And they did that thing where they broke through the fucking ramp in Ohio. And, you know, that shit was great. And then at the end of the year, there was another bad match when they did Shane, Candido, and Bigelow against Sabu, Taz, and Rob Van Dam in the famous match where Van Dam and Taz got a fight backstage. But that was
What happened there? What was fill me in on
the
that.
The finish of the match, the finish of the match was supposed to be Taz finally looking right into Shane Douglas's eyes and beating Shane's ass. But as he's doing that, RVD was supposed to do a crazy dive on Bam Bam Bigelow prior to it. Well, RVD's timing was off, so he hit the dive on Bam Bam as Taz's big moment with Shane in the ring was happening. So nobody cared about Taz finally getting hold of Shane because RVD didn't dive. So backstage, he got in his face, and I think that's the show where RVD slapped the shit out of Taz and knocked him out or whatever. But, like, that was Bigelow's last match. That was when Bigelow signed with WCW in, like, December 1998. And I was like, fuck, you know? Like, really? But, you know, like, well, from this point onward, I don't know too much about Bigelow's career. I just remember he showed up to wrestle Goldberg, and I was
right.
Like, fuck, this is incredible. And I remember losing my mind. I have not seen it since, but at the time, I remember it was kind of cool. And I think he lost
yeah.
to Goldberg to State Night because they're idiots. And, like, you know, that's all. And then after that, it's like, I don't remember much. I remember him and Sandman had a really great match at Spring Stampede 1999. Like legitimate 4-star match, like absolutely crazy. Everyone go back and watch it. After that, I don't really know what Bam Bam did. He's in that shitty hardcore division with Finley and Brian Knobb
yeah.
and all these other fucking idiots.
Well,
I don't remember
that. Well, I'll fill you in here. You know, first, like you said, he shows up, he does the feud with Goldberg, and you know at the time, see. You were up in the Northeast, man. You were watching ECW every week. You knew what Bam Bam had been doing for the last 3 years. As far as I was concerned, you know, the guy had just popped up after 4 years of being missing. You know, I didn't read the sheets. I didn't read the magazines at the time. I was just watching TV. That was, you know, the WWF and the WCW. So I hadn't seen the guy in 3 years, 2 years, you know. And he pops up and he fights with Goldberg. I'm like, wow, you know. The potential there at the time, you know, I thought was really great. But, you know, and Bam Bam, I thought, was the kind of guy that if they would have given him a true, you know, main event push, that him and Goldberg could have been something special, you know, similar to how Goldberg DDP was pretty awesome, you know. But mm-hmm. but they didn't really run with it. You know, it was really more, okay, well, let's put Goldberg back in this thing with Nash and ruin, you know, the one shining spot that they had on the TV at the time, but whatever, you know. And then he had a match with Scott Hall, and then, like you said, he did the hardcore division thing, which is just like completely miscasting Bam Bam Bigelow, right? I mean, you know, I mean, the guy can, you know, they probably assumed that just because he was an ECW guy, well, ECW is all that hardcore shit, so we'll just throw him in the hardcore division, you know, because they didn't know what the fuck to do with him. You know, which is really funny.
I think
stupid.
It would have worked if he would have dominated in the hardcore division. But, like, everybody there was just in that same division, and no one ever was better than anybody else. So it was like,
yeah.
Okay, who gives a shit? But,
no,
yeah,
man,
I
was so let down by that stuff, man. I just, you know, I mean, to me, the hardcore, I mean, it's bad enough that just the idea, you know, that with WWF and their hardcore title and WCW's hardcore title, I mean, that shit was a joke, you know? I mean, they saw that ECW was kind of this popular thing, and they just misread it, you know? Because I've watched a shitload of ECW recently. You know, shit was hardcore. But, you know, I mean, guys like New Jack, Balls, you know, the Rottens, yeah, I mean, it was almost hardcore just for hardcore's sake. But a lot of the matches that had hardcore elements, it was all within the context of the feuds that were going on. You know, it was like, yeah, well, we really don't like each other, so I'm going to fucking bash your head in with this table or chair or guardrail or whatever. you know. Whereas, like, yeah, New Jack was clearly, you know, I mean, bringing garbage cans out to the ring, you know, but they had been doing that shit for years. But I guess they just thought, well, that's what's at the top of the program, so that's all ECW is, you know. I don't know. It just really bothered me that you would put Bam Bam Bigelow in that role when you know, that company was such a mess at the time that, you know, he really could have done some good somewhere else, you know, but whatever. But then, you know, then he, after that, he was part of the triad with DDP and Canyon. And that was actually, you know, and that was, you know, probably another thing where they, okay, well, Bam Bam Bigelow was in the triple threat. Let's put him in another three-man stable, you know. But I actually liked that stable.
Terrible.
I thought they had some really good stuff.
Yeah? What was it? I don't remember anything they did. Like,
oh, man, that's when they were feuding with Malenko, your good friend Chris Benoit, and Perry Saturn. And then they would do they had the tag titles, and they would switch off where some days it would be DDP and Canyon, some days it was Bam Bam and DDP, and, you know,
yeah,
they were kind of doing the Freebirds gimmick. But you know, like I said, I mean, WCW TV at the time was shit, but, you know, the triad were actually having, like, really good matches, you know, largely because of their opponents, or maybe not because of their opponents, but they had credible opponents to work with, you know. So, I mean, the matches were good, even though the feuds and the insane nature of 1999 WCW just kind of ruins everything. And then, you know, and that was kind of it, man. That was the Bam Bam Bigelow run in WCW. I don't remember seeing him after that, you know.
Yeah, I think he did a couple indies and that was it. And then he did a show for 3PW with Dusty and Kevin Sullivan and somebody. And then left. And then I read he was going to make a hoagie shop in a place called Hamlin, PA. He was going to open a hoagie shop. He was going to make it. But he was going to open it. And I was excited to go there. And then by the time I tried to go there, it was gone. So I was like, okay.
You're
going
to ask him to if you could hold this briefcase again now that you were bigger than the briefcase.
Yeah, there'd be hoagie stuff in it. So, yeah. But then I heard he was caught in a motorcycle accident. All fucked up. Someone might have died, his passenger or some shit.
Yeah.
So then I was like, whoa, fuck. And then, like, I heard he died. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Like, I don't even remember when he died.
Yeah.
He died, like, 2005, like, right before Mike Awesome, I think, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember what year he died either. I just remember, you know, that there was, like, a story going around where he had, like, saved some kid from a fire or something, and, you know, and it was like a real good, feel-good story, you know. Even this guy who was down on his luck, you know, was there, you know, saving kids or something. I think it was saving kids, saving families or something, you know. Do you remember that story?
Maybe. I think something like that. But I just remember hearing he got really into drugs and he died. Like, all right, great.
Yeah,
but, yeah, that's
I think what I think what we're going to have to do for future shows, Rob, is kind of ended on a high note, you know, and kind of, you know, not go so much into the personal things, because once we start, you know, we've done it with Gordy, we did it with Jake, you know, and
we'll do it with Ruth.
I get really depressed at the end of the shows, man.
No,
we
I'm not depressed. I mean, he had a good life, I guess. I mean, whatever. It just seemed like he took a lot of crazy bumps, and a lot of that caught up to him toward the end. So he was on all kinds of pain pills and shit, so. Whatever, he's dead, but, you know, he's awesome. I mean, fuck, he was the man. I mean, let's talk about favorite matches, I guess, like we usually do.
Yeah, and he died in January of 2007, so.
What? 2007?
Yeah. Okay, this is according to Wikipedia. This is January 19th, 2007.
That does not seem right. That means he'd have been alive for both one-night stands, and that didn't happen, I don't think. Whatever. But anyway, yeah. I'm going to have to look that up. That's weird. But anyway, my favorite Bam Bam Bigelow stuff. Number one, Bret Hart match. Number two, Barry Windham match. Number three, Rob Van Dam match, either in Jacksonville, Florida, fan camp, or Buffalo.
Okay. I was waiting for the Barry Windham and the Bret Hart matches to pop up, but
they just did.
Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry, I lost you, Rob. You there?
Hello.
Okay, I can hear you. I think that's what his problem is, man. Your phone was going in and out on me, man. It might be my phone, too. So.
All right, my favorite matches again were Bret Hart, King of the Ring, Barry Windham, Starrcade, Rob Van Dam, either Jacksonville or Buffalo. Shoot.
Okay. If I were to recommend some Bam Bam matches, I would definitely recommend that people check out his 30-minute Texas Death Match against Jerry Lawler. Love it. One of my favorite Bam Bam matches. And to me, what was so shockingly great about that is that Bam Bam was so young, you know, that he had such a great match so early in his career. I'm with Rob on the Windham match. I really like the Starrcade match. You know, I didn't like the finish, but I love the match itself. You know, I got to give him props for the Lawrence Taylor match. And, I think Bam Bam is one of those guys where, you know, he was a journeyman and, you know, he went around the world and, you know, he actually left quite a few memorable moments in his wake. And if you want to see an overview of his career, my buddy Gene, who goes by the name of GB Brutal, did a Bam Bam Bigelow comp. So be sure to email Gene or send me a PM and I'll get you his email address if you're interested in picking up some footage of Bam Bam. Rob, what do you got?
We forgot completely that he went to Mexico and he saw Andre the Giant shit all over Bad News Brown, six man. But like, he might have done some good Mexico shit, but we will get to it some other time.
Yeah, man, I've never seen him in Mexico, man. I know he was also in war and did some crazy six-mans in war, too. So, you know. But,
he might have been in UWA in Mexico, that one with Connect. I think
right,
he was
okay.
There in, like, 1990-91, but, yeah, whatever.
Well, you know, we had actually talked about that where we couldn't figure out where he was at, so maybe that's the answer to our own question,
yep.
You know, that
it probably is.
He was there in Mexico hanging out, watching Andre have bowel movements on fucking Bad News Brown, you know? No big deal.
He tells the story really good on a shoot interview, so, yeah.
Okay, I'll have to rewatch that, man, because I haven't seen that shoot interview probably in, 5 years? I don't know. No,
it was one of the older
shoot interviews, right?
Yeah, one of the first and one of the best. Really funny. So.
Yeah. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. And Rob and I have been talking. We're going to try and get off Blog Talk Radio within the next couple of weeks. You know, probably start up our own web page, you know, to host our podcast on. And when that happens, we'll let you know. We'll give you the details. But in the meantime, you know, just keep watching wrestling. Keep watching Bam Bam Bigelow matches. Let us know what you think of the show. And have a good night. Rob, you want to say anything before I head out?
Bam Bam Bigelow is awesome. I will leave with this.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Want to know your AER from your APR? Keen to master the meaning of a tracker mortgage? Got an interest in what compound interest is? Well, help is at hand. In the time that it takes to listen to this ad, you could get the answers to explain the banking jargon you've been baffled by. Just go online and search for Halifax Jargon Busters. Jargon Busters from Halifax. The people who give you extra.